Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom and our lifestyle article this month. We're on page 20 if you have your magazine with you, and you can open it to that page. And we're going to be talking about setting boundaries. What is a boundary? Well, first of all, let me introduce my panel today. I have...
Hello, I'm Christina.
And I'm Simon.
And I'm Linda. And we're all happy to be with you today. And we're going to be talking about, as I said, limits or boundaries. Simon, do you find it easy or hard to set boundaries or set limits on your life?
I think it depends which part of my life we're talking about. Basically, when we say boundaries here, this word boundary, it normally means a line, whether it's a real line or just something we sort of imagine that sort of divides up space or territory. And so usually when we say boundaries, we're talking about the edge of your property or the line between one country and another. It's not a real line drawn on the dirt, but it's everybody kind of knows where the border or the boundary is. In this case, we're talking about personal boundaries, and so we're talking about things you are willing to do, things you aren't willing to do.
Okay, and which area do you find it more difficult to draw boundaries? Do you find it your personal life, your social life, your business life?
I think it depends. At different times in my life, different areas are under threat. But I think most of our listeners agree with me when I say that it seems that all of the different areas of your life seem to constantly be trying to creep into other areas of your life. And so, for example, your work life might constantly be pushing you to take work home with you or stay extra time at the office, things like that. Your personal life might constantly be demanding more attention, things like that. And so these personal boundaries, they move, and they're constantly moving.
Do you find that too, Christina?
Yes, I think also Simon said it depends, you know, when and the timing. So it's all about timing. And for me, lately, personally, actually, because these days I'm working a lot, I just started a new job, and I'm making also a lot of friends, but I usually have to plan ahead, and usually my plans are on the weekends, because I usually don't see my friends during the weekday, because I want to sleep, I want to relax, spend time with my cat, and so sometimes I'll plan an outing for three friends in one day, and it's kind of a lot. It might be too much for me. So I have to set my limits, set my boundary for that.
Okay. So we're talking about, we're going to be talking about boundaries here, and Simon and Christina have both given us some kind of indication as to where we're going to go with this article. But let's read first here on page 20. We're just going to read this introduction, how to set limits for yourself and not just yourself, but others as well.
Setting boundaries promotes happiness. Advice for living a healthier and balanced life. How to set limits for yourself and others. Do you find yourself saying yes to too many requests? One good strategy is to set boundaries. We live in a world where we're encouraged to light a fire under ourselves, says a psychologist we'll call John. The clients who come to me for counseling are angry with themselves. They want to know how to keep the bonfire blazing.
So we see that our title here is Setting Boundaries Promotes Happiness. And as Simon said, you know, boundaries is we usually think of as lines between countries. But here we're thinking about it's the edge around us that we don't want to go across. Maybe it's too many hours. We'll work this many hours, but our boundary is 10 hours and not 12 hours, or 8 hours and not 9 hours. And by doing this, it promotes happiness. So how do we do this for ourselves and for others? So the first question is I want to ask both panelists is, do you find yourself saying yes to too many requests? Christina, let's start with you.
Yes, definitely. I think I'm too nice.
You're too nice?
I think I'm too nice. So, yeah, like I said before, sometimes I'll have an outing with three different people because I just say yes to them all because I don't know if it's guilt or what I'm feeling. I feel bad. And it causes me physically to be a little sometimes I get physically exhausted. So.
Well, that's because you're too busy. How about you, Simon? Do you find yourself saying yes to too many requests?
Not at the moment, because over the past year or so, I've been focusing on saying no. So
nice.
at the moment, this isn't really a problem. I think, though, that sort of the key to this whole reading is actually that phrase they use, light a fire under ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that we're under pressure to do that. When you light a fire under yourself, the idea is to, I guess, motivate yourself or push yourself to just into action. And so I think that phrase is basically tied to this sort of guilt we often kind of feel in modern life. We look around us and we see maybe one of our classmates has been more successful, and we say to ourselves, I've wasted so much time. Like, I have to get out there and learn another language and finish a PhD and all of this different stuff. So we sort of put ourselves under pressure to do all of these different things, and maybe without really having a good reason.
I think it's kind of interesting that the people who feel, well, it says here, we live in a world where we're encouraged to light a fire under ourselves. But if we look at the actual definition of light a fire under, it's usually used on someone who has not been doing enough before. But we often use it on ourselves or somebody that actually is doing a lot, and we want them to do more. Because a person that's really not doing much anyway, very hard sometimes to light a fire under them, right? Or under ourselves.
Well, and that's sort of the idea. This psychologist who's going under the name John, I guess he doesn't want to reveal his real name, so they say we'll call him John. This psychologist, he's talking about clients who come to him because they're angry with themselves. And I assume they're angry with themselves for not having accomplished enough, or for wasting too much time, or not being able to stay focused, or whatever. And so basically, I think the idea here is that people are putting demands on themselves, performance demands that maybe aren't realistic, just right because they're trying to compete or whatever.
Yeah, and it says they want to know how to keep the bonfire blazing. So that means they want to know how to keep that fire there.
Yeah.
And a bonfire, for our listeners who don't know what they are, is usually outside, and it's a huge fire that a group of people do together. Like if you go camping or you're on a beach or something, you build a big fire. That's a bonfire. So that means they want a big fire under them. But I think it's interesting that it says that these clients are angry. You know, they're angry with themselves because they feel like slacked off too much.
Yeah, and just by note of explanation, how this term light a fire under yourself relates to motivation, I guess the idea is if you're at a bonfire and you realize you're sitting in the bonfire, you jump up very quickly
mm-hmm.
and get out of the way, right?
Right.
And so that's the idea. When you have a fire lit under yourself, it's motivation or good reason to move quickly and get to action.
Yes, also I think they have a feel of wanting to please others or
right.
themselves, and which limits themselves to feel overbearing sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see if we agree that this is not a healthy situation to be in. We need to make some changes. So let's look at the second column on page 20, and we'll read that right now, and then we'll talk about it.
Making changes. John shares these strategies to prevent self-torture. Vary your routine to refresh your mind. Mix boring tasks with those that require a different set of mental muscles. Alert someone early on that you're going to say no. Most of us chicken out and overgive if we fail to give proper notice to others. Realize that you do have a breaking point. Plenty of distracted people have automobile accidents or slide into deep depressions all the time. Avoid living near your breaking point by pacing yourself. One good way to set limits is to ask, "What am I doing too much of? Staying late every night at work? Volunteering too much?" Remember, in order to stretch yourself, you have to sacrifice something. Sure, you can win awards, but ask, "What am I sick and tired of doing?" How can I dial things back down a notch?
So we're back to John, our assumed psychologist. He's assuming this name. And we're seeing...
The secret psychologist.
The secret psychologist. Yeah. And he is going to make some... give us some advice about how to make some changes. And I like this. He shares these strategies to prevent self-torture.
I laughed when I read that.
So what is it, if we know what torture, what is self-torture, Christina?
Yeah, self and torture is inflicting extreme physical or mental pain on yourself.
Okay, so you're torturing yourself.
Okay, I'm not torturing myself. I hope you're not torturing yourself.
I'm not. So what are some of the suggestions that he gives us? What's the first one that he gives us, Christina? What should we do?
You should vary your routine to refresh your mind, which means to have a range of different qualities.
Okay. So if you have a bunch of tasks that you have to do, don't just focus on the hardest one that you have to do all the time. You should break it up with something else in between.
Right, make it more diverse.
Okay. Do you do that?
Yes, I actually do.
Okay.
So when I'm doing a big task, I'm not just focused on that one big task, like cleaning my house. Maybe I'll play music. That helps a lot. So.
How about you, Simon?
Yeah, I try to get as much variety into my daily or weekly routine as I can. Sometimes that's not easy to do, but yeah, it's good to have variety.
Right. And actually, he says that by doing this, if you vary your routine, then we're more refreshed because we look at something. We're just not programmed to like continue to do it like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, day after day
after
day. We can change it to A, C, F, G, something. So I think it's interesting. We use a set of mental muscles, which means it requires your brain to think in a different way. Okay, and what else should you do? What's the next thing that he recommends?
Well, the next one is kind of an interesting one for me. He says, alert someone early on you're going to say no. And I guess the idea then is don't wait to say no. Say no as soon as you know, K-N-O-W, that you don't want to do something.
That you're going to say no, N-O.
Yeah, and he notes here that most of us chicken out and end up over-giving. So we end up doing too much because we don't give proper notice. We don't say no, and then it's too late to back out.
Yeah, and this chicken out is kind of a very American they call it a phrasal verb to chicken out. It means to decide not to do something because you're too frightened to do it, because we're too frightened to tell the person no if we're going to back out too late. And you'll use this word chicken in a lot of different phrases. You'll see it. So it's good to know how to use it. I don't know if I would. I'm too chicken to do that. It means I'm too afraid to do something.
Like if I want to ask you to go skydiving, are you going to chicken out?
No. I want to go.
You're not frightened.
Well, I kind of want to go. And then you're right. If you don't give somebody proper notice, then we tend to just do it. And then I think this is a good one. We have to realize that we have a breaking point. And a breaking point is that, you know, the point you come to where you can't deal with situations or you have too much to do that you lose control and you can't deal with anything then because you don't really know where to start.
Yeah, and he gives some examples in the next line. He says, plenty of distracted people have automobile accidents or slide into deep depression all the time.
Why would a person be distracted here? I think it's kind of interesting, this phrasing. Plenty of distracted people.
Well, I think the idea is that it means people are not focused on the thing they're doing. And the reason they're not focused on that is they're thinking about other things that are going on in their lives.
Oh, so they're driving and they're thinking about some task they have to do.
Yeah, and so they end up driving into a light post or something like that. I think basically the idea with this sentence is that John is trying to give us examples of bad things that happen, but they're actually happening for a reason, and the reason is that people are, you know, at their breaking point. They're overwhelmed. They have too much going on in other parts of their lives.
Right. And then they not only have automobile accidents, it also says this is a good phrase, they slide into deep depressions all the time. If you slide into something, you know, you might not even notice it, right, Christina? You just find yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of automatic.
Yeah, and
right?
Slowly you're going into it, and then you might wake up and go, why am I so depressed?
Right. It's the condition of being sad.
Right, right. But I think that the thing here is that you just wake up one day and realize it's not like you're jumping into it. You know, it's just happening slowly.
And then they reach that breaking point.
Right. So avoid living near your breaking point by pacing yourself. Do you think that's good advice? I mean, what do you pace yourself with?
I mean, it's kind of good advice, but I guess it sort of depends on how successful you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who are really success-oriented really push themselves all the time. And so, you know, he's saying basically here he wants us to avoid living near our breaking points. But I suppose if you want to be more successful than other people, you need to live nearer to your breaking point than other people do.
I also think it might have to do with how far along you are in your career. Because I know somebody quite well that, you know, was working at a job and it required a lot of like weekend work and 60, 75 hours a week and a lot of cancellation of social things that this person wanted to do. And finally they were like, I've had enough. And found another job, took less cut in pay to do it, but has a reasonable work schedule anyway, because really he was living over his breaking point for quite a long time. So we have to look and see, you know, what's going to cause it and how much you can take.
Yeah, so like I say, I think it depends on people's goals. Obviously, we don't want to be at our breaking point all the time, because that's a negative thing for success too, but living under different amounts of pressure is more or less necessary depending on what sort of goals you're trying to accomplish, I think.
I don't think it's bad all the time. I think that we're looking at, you know, how to have a healthier and balanced life. You can do it. To me, I always feel like I can do anything for a certain period of time, but if it goes on for several years, then I'm like, okay, I can't stand this. And a good way to set limits is to ask, what am I doing too much of? Am I staying late every night at work? Am I volunteering too much? I mean, when I started working, changing what I was doing from teaching to editing, it was difficult, you know, and I found myself working late, you know, five nights a week for several months until I had knew kind of what I was doing and kind of the flow. But, you know, that was a long time ago, and I certainly didn't keep doing that for year after year after year. So we can all ask ourselves, what am I doing too much of? And to stretch yourself, you have to sacrifice something, right, Christina?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even when it comes to family and friends, let's say growing up, actually, a lot of my friends' parents, they never saw them because they were working too much. They were working on the weekends. They didn't have any time to spend with their families. And so one of my friend's father, he got to that breaking point where he's like, you know what, I'm just going to change jobs, switch my jobs. And it made life overall much simpler for him and his family.
Okay. He just said to himself, what am I sick and tired of doing?
Right. Family's more important, right?
Right. And I like this last question here. How can I dial things back down a notch? When we think of this, this is usually referring to, we don't really have them here so much in Asia, but like where I'm from, if you have heaters or furnaces, you know, it's a dial and you dial the heat up, so you dial it up a degree or two. That's called a notch or two.
Yeah, here we have them in hot pot restaurants.
Oh, yeah, so you dial it down.
When you're adjusting the knob, the little controller for how hot things are, if you go, you know, the controller is marked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
right.
7, 8, 9, 10. And if you turn it down, so it's lower heat by one number, one notch, then you're dialing it down a notch. So the idea is just that you're lowering the pressure,
right.
Lowering the heat on that bonfire that might be under you.
Okay, well, let's go to page 21 now, and we have a short section here that we're going to read called Learning from Others' Mistakes.
Learning from Others' Mistakes. A man we'll call Richard worked three straight years without a single off day. Richard's wife just left him for another man. The moral of this story is this. If you're subtracting too much energy from yourself, you're likely taking something from those people close to you as well. In fact, noticing the atmosphere of your workplace, home, and support network is important. You want to leave breathing room to enjoy life, and you want others to feel this breathing room as well.
So we're looking at a man called Richard. We just left a man called John. Now we have Richard, and he made a huge mistake here. What was it, Simon?
Well, he worked too much. It tells us that he worked 3 straight years. So for 3 years in a row, every day, without taking a single day off. And as a result of that, his wife just left him for another man.
How sad.
Poor Richard. Poor wife.
So, actually, I like this. The moral of this story is we often see that at the end of fairy tales, right? The moral of this.
Right, the lesson.
Yeah, that's right.
The lesson to be learned from this is, really, if you're subtracting too much energy from yourself, so if you're giving so much from yourself, you're probably taking it from the people nearest you. So for him, he worked 3 years in a row without a day off. That means every holiday, too. I mean, Christmas, for Western holidays, you know, Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, every day. And he also sucked it out of his wife, too, all of the energy and everything that she had. So she couldn't stand it any longer. Mm-hmm. But we don't want, I think the article is we do not want to get to that point. So if you see yourself nearing some of these examples, nearing the end of some of these examples, it might be a good time to take stock of your life. And in fact, noticing the atmosphere of your workplace, home, and support network is important. And this is one of those kind of buzzwords, your network and your support network. And do you feel that you have a support network? Simon, do you feel like you have a support network?
Not anymore. I spend too much time working. No, I think most of us have support networks, families, friends, different people we're connected with. And I think basically the suggestion in this paragraph is that we're supposed to pay attention to sort of the health or the condition of those different relationships. So it's okay to focus on something like focus on success or whatever, but you have to realize that there will be a cost to focusing so much on that. And if you want to maintain some sort of balance, you have to check in with your other relationships and sort of see how things are going and be available to other people and be present.
That's right. And the support network, if you listen to them, they'll tell you because they'll help or encourage you during a time of difficulty, and they'll also tell you you're working too much. You're doing this too much. I mean, that's the whole point.
Right. Most of my family's back in New Jersey, but I do Skype with them and I tell them what's going on. So they still do support me from America. But I also have my sister here who's mm-hmm. very supportive and church friends, which helps a lot.
Right. And hopefully if we find it difficult to set boundaries, they might tell us what they've noticed that maybe we need to pay attention to. So this is an interesting phrase. You want to leave breathing room to enjoy life. This phrase, breathing room, what does it mean to you?
It means space, not literally the space in the sky, but time to enjoy yourself, to have fun with friends and family.
Okay. So, yeah, that's a good definition. Just leave yourself some time to back off from whatever it is that you're so focused on so that you can take time for yourself to recharge and regenerate and feel, you know, like you're enjoying life. Well, we have a couple of other sections here. If you look on page 20, if you have your magazine, you'll see the life balance, all of these things that this person is balancing here. But we also can look at the one on the bottom of, or on page 20, it says, changes that keep you sane. I thought this was kind of interesting. Keep your sanity or keep you sane. And it says, a friend of ours we'll call Patty told us recently, I'd like to hire a full-time housekeeper, but instead I'm hiring a cook. She explained that the cook means that she's bringing home restaurant food 3 days a week. I have 3 kids, a husband, and no close relatives to help me cope with life, says Patty, so I feel fine about spending money for healthy food from local restaurants. Patty sums it up this way. If I can save 2 or 3 hours a week, That's enough time to exercise, read, or talk with a friend. A small change can save your sanity. What do you think about this?
Well, the first thing that stands out to me is this idea that she's implying that she's doing something special by bringing food home, which I think is pretty common in Asia. And so I think, first of all, it's a good reminder that in North America, in the West, people cook most of their meals at home by themselves. They don't bring food home. They don't go out to restaurants. And so it puts a lot of pressure on people in the home because their personal life takes a lot more time. It takes a lot of time preparing food and taking care of houses and things like that. And so this person has found a way around that problem just by bringing food home. And basically the idea is that it's worth the cost of bringing food home just to have the extra free time.
Right, because I think food is a lot more expensive there as well, especially like prepared food that you're bringing home from a restaurant. And she has three kids, so it's even more expensive. So that's her housekeeper or her cook, and it helps her with her sanity. And then another example that we'll talk about tomorrow is how to stay accountable. We'll be looking at a book written about this whole topic of setting boundaries, so be sure to join us then for as we continue our discussion and our lifestyle article about setting boundaries promotes happiness. We'll hope you join us then. See you then. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.